Tokyo, Australia, Germany.
Go head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Coming up on 2 minutes past the hour, this is The Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is where we live. That's where you go if you would like to join in the real-time multimedia madcap extravaganza, the zany, wacky experience that is The Horn chat room. Just go to HeadOnRadioNetwork.com and click on chat room, pick yourself out a screen name and a password, and you will be right there. In the midst of all the aforementioned wacky, zany, multimedia, merry, etc. And you'll be greeted by Anatole and Barkway, Hoghead, Jug-a-Punch, Laborman, Lamar with the silent R, Squeaky, Steve from Georgistan, VT Blom, and longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator, Sparky, who, being a spacing guild master, has chosen to take the day off from folding space and is simply Sparky in the chat room. Even spacing guild masters are sometimes afflicted by allergies and made worse when the wind has the pollen flying about the wilds of Northern California. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid, and this is actually Titanic Tuesday. Although, to be quite honest, a lot of me still thinks it's more in Monday because you guys kindly gave me the night off last Friday so that Agnes and I could celebrate our anniversary yesterday, and we did. We had a lovely anniversary meal at a little Japanese restaurant in Somersville. See, that's when you know that a food style has become ubiquitous, when a place like Somersville, West Virginia, has a Japanese restaurant. And Agnes had had a bento box, and I had three different kinds of little hand rolls. Let's see, spicy tuna, regular tuna, and albacore with scallion, and they were delicious. Yes, of course. Live, it is the second day of May 2017, and program note, sorry for the weirdness this week, but I have been tomorrow evening to a progressive group there and talk a little about the place where we personally live, and so that, you know, I'm gonna go, I'm God's sakes again with the buffering whatsoever, none what. Well, hopefully it'll settle down in fairly short order. I really, really. So anyway, what that amounts to is no program tomorrow evening, and my apologies therefore. But again, this is one of those things where I'll be talking to people who don't know about the AIC Act, who are in West Virginia and probably don't even necessarily know don't even know the level of harm that's being perpetrated against them. So, no, no program, but, you know, back for Thorn in the Side Thursday. This is just, I mean, the calendar just worked out this way, and I apologize. So, thanks to the overnight crew of subscribers, and thanks to y'all last Friday, and with particular thanks to Mark and Carlo, formerly of San Francisco, now of Texas. Well, we're good for fundraising for this evening, which means that we can, or for yesterday, which means that we can do this evening's fundraising and tomorrow's, and still be okay come Thursday. Made the easier because of our buddy the Angry Architect in Australia, who just knocked it down by $50, and so taken together, that means if we raise $300 this evening. One at 300, two at 150, four at 75, eight at 3750, etc. If we raise $300 this evening, then we'll be good for tonight and tomorrow, and we'll be even come Thursday. Weeks kind of disappear in a hurry, don't they? It sure seems like it. But that's where it stands. So, thank you to all of our subscribers at the first of the month. Thank you very kindly to the Angry Architect, and hopefully folks will jump in, and you know, one at 30, 30 at 10, or ten at 30, 30 at 10, yada yada yada, and it all happens over at headonradionetwork.com under the tab Contribute. That's where the PayPal interface is. For those who prefer the United States Postal Service, the mailing address is The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, BECKLEYWV, 25801. And that's just let me know, and I'll tell Boss Man Wayne. Boss Man Wayne's going to be there tomorrow evening, too. So that'll be kind of nice as well. All right, so, yeah, there was a mention in the chat room a couple of minutes ago that we should probably have some leftover Morans. We should probably have some leftover Morans from yesterday as well for Titanic Tuesday this evening. And I think it will be kind of a hybrid. Because I had a stack. It felt like a stack like the Manhattan phone book that gathered together all week long. We can talk about any number of these things along the way. But merciful goodness. In addition to Morans, and you know, we might even have a pre-prayer meeting Wednesday story, just to get that out of the way. But we really kind of have to start with the interviews over the weekend. John Dickerson, in particular, his interview for Face the Nation with Comrade Kumquat. It is becoming, once again, if you're part of this little broadcast community, you can take a certain amount of pride in being ahead of the curve, way out ahead of the curve. We've been talking about the 25th Amendment's, the 25th Amendment and its impact on the presidency for months now, because that impact is very real. And because the impeachment clause of the Constitution provides you no remedy for a president who becomes unable to fulfill the duties of his office. Think of it this way. The 25th Amendment was actually born out of the assassination of John Kennedy. Because reeling in its horror, the Congress was horrified. The whole country was horrified at what had been done to John Kennedy. But in the midst of that horror, there began to be some conversations about what would have happened had John Kennedy merely been rendered, say, comatose instead of killed outright. And it didn't take very long for people who understood the Constitution to realize that there would have that would have led to a legitimate constitutional crisis. Because while the framers of the Constitution provided a mechanism for succession, that's why there's a vice president, which John Adams referred to during his term as vice president to George Washington as, I'm paraphrasing, but the most useless job on earth. Well, the question is fairly easily answered in the case of the death of the said president. But the answer is not nearly as clear when the question is one of the disability of the president. And the country had gone through that. There had been the long, slow, agonizing death of James Garfield, and then in the aftermath of the First World War, there had been the disability of Woodrow Wilson. And in neither instance was anyone able to do a damned thing about it. In particular, Woodrow Wilson's wife simply wouldn't let anyone near him, and for all intents and purposes was the acting president of the United States for a considerable amount of time. So that was what led to the passage, and in fact and there wasn't a lot of fight about it. The adoption of the 25th Amendment. And the 25th Amendment provides a formal succession. And then in Section 4, which we have gone over at length in the past, it details what happens when the president, quote, is unable to discharge the duties of the office. And lo and behold, like I said, you can feel good. You can feel like you're way, 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 way out in front of the curve if you're because of your participation in this community. Now, more and more people are talking about the 25th Amendment, especially in light of what happened over the weekend with the Tangerine Tiberius. Because in many ways, it's deeply disturbing. The civil, and look, okay, let's get this out of the way on the front end, because I think, I don't know, but I think that there are people who maybe think I put too much emphasis on the impact that the Civil War had on the United States. Well, we can kind of put that argument to bed now. I really can't fathom a person thinking that there would be too much there's too much emphasis placed on the effect, the historical effect of the Civil War on the United States. But yeah. But no. There have been a lot of genuinely bizarre things that the Mar-a-Lago Mussolini has said since he became the President of the United States. And God knows, he said a lot of mean, spiteful, hateful, ignorant, etc. things before he became President of the United States. And some people tried to explain that away and say that, well, you know, that's just how he is, and he does that to keep people off balance. What? But then came this. Trump on Andrew Jackson. Andrew Jackson, who died in 1846. His wife died. He's talking about Rachel. They destroyed his wife, and she died. All right, we're going to go through this in little bits and pieces, because this is so ahistorical. This is so, the term that's being bandied about now is, this is so historically illiterate that you really do have to take it in little pieces. He's referring to the death of Rachel Jackson. Rachel Jackson married Andrew Jackson, and they apparently loved each other very much. I mean, there he was, a wealthy Tennessee slave owner. And there she was, a woman unhappy in her present marriage. And so, Jackson and Rachel, I guess we'll say, fell in love. The problem being that because of, communications were not instantaneous, and Rachel Jackson married Andrew Jackson before her divorce from her prior husband was final. And it is proof positive that politics in this country has ever been nasty AF, to use the current argo. Now, at the time when John Quincy Adams and Andrew Jackson were running against each other for the presidency, the custom was that neither candidate actually went out and campaigned. The surrogates did all the dirty work. And it was, in fact, dirty work. And this campaign was dirty, as were others. And the Adams campaign, among other things, used the truthful fact about Andrew Jackson that he was a slaveholder and a slave trader who sold living human flesh for profit. Kind of no getting around that. At one point in time, for instance, he offered to he put a bounty on a runaway slave in a Nashville newspaper, offering to pay money to have the slave beaten, whipped. Yes, really. But along the way, they also made hay out of the business with Rachel's divorce. And many, and you know, it was years and years old. It would be kind of like talking about, say, in let's say there was a presidential election in 2016, and people on the left and right went on and 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 on about something that had happened in the marriage of one of the candidates, say, 25 years earlier. So in 1828, after in the November election of 1828, Andrew Jackson beat John Quincy Adams. Three weeks later, Rachel was dead. Instead of blaming her bad heart because she complained of symptoms of horrible pain in the left side of her, beneath her left breast, down her arm, in her left shoulder, you know, classic cardiac symptoms. Well, Andrew Jackson blamed the campaign of John Quincy Adams. As they buried Rachel on Christmas Eve, Andrew Jackson, disgusting owner of slaves, said, "May God Almighty forgive her murderers. I never can." So that's what surrounds that's the history of what the Clementine Caligula was talking about when he said his wife died. They destroyed his wife and she died. No. You know what destroyed her? You know what destroyed Andrew Jackson's wife? Heart disease. Granted, it was 1828, but yeah, heart disease. you don't just suddenly have heart disease because somebody brought up the fact that you married your husband while you were still married to your previous husband. Now, there's also the inherent business about whether, you know, about paperwork and you know, really, what does it matter? And bigamy, I got two husbands, and that's what Rachel said. I got two husbands, and it's mighty bigamy. Did I mention that Rachel was also a smoker? In particular, Rachel smoked a corncob pipe. But instead of note, and Jackson was not a lettered man. Maybe one of the reasons that that Marcus Aurelius identifies with him is because Jackson was not a lettered man. He was far better. Committing genocide against the native population of this country, far better at whipping slaves, far better at waging war than he was at being a president. And by the way, along the way, Andrew Jackson was an advocate of that nasty old concept that deviled this country and still devils it to this day, states' rights. Now, we down here in the southern states would like to own human flesh and barter and sell it because our states' rights give us that opportunity. States' rights. Anyway, so Trump says his wife died. They destroyed his wife and she died. Okay, early on, there may need to be recourse to the hockey puck and the duct tape. He was a swashbuckler. But when his wife died, you know, he visited her grave every day. I visited her grave, actually, because I was in Tennessee. That's just a breathtaking juxtaposition. He visited her grave every day. I visited her grave. Therefore, I must be Andrew Jackson and trout live in trees. Ha. Swashbuckler. Swashbuckler.
What are you people? On dope?
Makes you wonder, doesn't it? Swashbuckler. Just for the fun of it, let's look up the definition of swashbuckler. Oh, thanks a lot. That's a lot of help. A swashbuckling person. I was always told that in defining a word, you should not use the word defined in the actual definition. A swaggering or daring soldier or adventurer. A novel or drama dealing with a swashbuckler. Now, if you think that Donald J. Trump knows about that definition, well, you probably voted for him. In point of fact, because we know that Donald Trump doesn't read things, And by the way, another definition of swashbuckler is a film genre largely about pirates. You could say that the recently completed four-season series on Stars, Black Sails, was a swashbuckling drama because it had pirates. Lots and lots of pirates. But more particularly, in 1958, which would fit nicely within... 1958 would make the Pumpkin Potentate about 12 years old. And, you know, things like that stick in our memories. 1958 saw the release by Paramount of a film called The Buccaneer. It starred Yul Brynner as Jean Lafitte. It also had a supporting role for an up-and-coming young actor named Charlton Heston as Andrew Jackson. And it centered on Lafitte's efforts in support of the young United States in advance of the Battle of New Orleans. And Jean Lafitte was the swashbuckler. Okay? Yeah. The swashbuckler. The password is swashbuckler. This is probably where the word entered the now spirochete hollowed out brain materials of Donald J. Trump. And people who have dealt with various forms of dementia know that it is often the case in dementia that people who suffer from it have near instantaneous encyclopedic recall of things that happened decades and decades and decades and decades ago, but can't remember what they had for lunch. I submit this is probably a case of that. Mm-hmm. So that's where the word swashbuckler came. But then he was a swashbuckler, but when his wife died, you know, he visited her grave every day. Hey, what are the spirochetes saying there? That Donald wishes he could visit Melanoma's grave every day? Or perhaps Ivana's, or Marla's, or that he would? I visited her grave, actually, because I was in Tennessee. Now, perhaps for folks out on, say, you know, the West Coast, west of the Mississippi, even further west than that, because, you know, part of Tennessee is bounded by the Mississippi River. In fact, Andrew Jackson had a hand in the founding of Memphis. But never mind. Maybe, just as I don't think about... California is huge! And, you know, Texas, huger.
Huge.
Montana, broad, tall. Right? But Tennessee can take you the biggest part of a day to drive across. Get on Interstate 40, coming out of several hours, going the speed limit in an automobile. So to say that one was in Tennessee, you know, or one visited the held his little Clavering rally in That's twice now. That beast. That he can't even fill the room. And why would you go? Because it's the same stump speech that he was giving 9 months ago. But there are clearly things going bad inside what used to be known as the brain of Donald Trump. I visited a grave, actually, because I was in Tennessee. And then Selena Zito. Who sounds like a cross between a psychotherapist and a kindergarten teacher, replies, "That's right, you were in Tennessee." To which Trump replies, "And it was amazing. The people of Tennessee are amazing people. They love Andrew Jackson. They love Andrew Jackson in Tennessee." Can somebody... Oh, we really, really do need a mental health professional to unpack a little bit of this right now. The repetition, the same words over and over. "And it was amazing. The people of Tennessee are amazing people. They love Andrew Jackson. They love Andrew Jackson in Tennessee." This is not normal cognitive process. So after he says they love Andrew Jackson in Tennessee, you know, Selena Zito's probably sitting there going, "You know, I thought this would have been really cool if it had been Barack Obama. Man, this would have been a fascinating conversation. I'm sitting here with a toddler, and we've got everything but the milk and cookies." So she says, "He's a fascinating. He's a fascinating." And then the gate on the cage flies open, and all the little birdies go flying out. Or would it be bats? I mean, Selena Zito has stuff she wants to talk to this guy about. But it's pointless because now... he's gone. He's off wandering the halls of his own private museum. He's a fascinating... And who knows what Selena Zito was going to say. He's a fascinating president. He's a fascinating figure from American history. But it's time for Donald J. Trump... presidential history expert par excellence to teach Selena Zito. I mean, no, really, no. This is the hockey. You're going to send me email. "Thank you, Bob, for telling me about the hockey." You've heard this before, but still. I mean, had Andrew Jackson been a little later, you wouldn't have had the Civil War. Had Andrew Jackson, slave owner, criticized by other slave owners for his unethical slave trading behavior, been a little later, you wouldn't have had the Civil War. This is madness, but it's not the worst of it. "He was a very tough person, but he had a big heart. Very big heart. Huge heart." Yeah, I know. It wasn't so big-hearted toward the slaves. not saying, but we can stop saying. He had a big heart. Our buddy Michael in Madison. Yesterday posted, well, in Trumpville, they say, Andrew Jackson's small heart grew 3 sizes this day. And then the true meaning of the Civil War came through, and the Andrew received the praise of 5 Jacksons plus 2. Yeah. Grinch reference. And Michael also wondered when Trump became a fan of Andrew Jackson anyway. Positing that maybe it was when mention was made of removing Andrew Jackson from the $20 bill, which should have happened a long time ago, but hasn't yet. But the idea of putting Harriet Tubman on some $20 bills, outraged the alt-white. But I think there's a simpler answer to the Andrew Jackson fascination. He got the Andrew Jackson fascination from racist Bannon. What have you done with Haji? Steve Bannon. Because there is a certain amount of adoration for Jackson in the alt-white. But this is where it goes completely off the rails. He was really angry that he saw what was happening with regard to the Civil War. He said, there's no reason for this. Again, Andrew Jackson died 1845, Civil War, 1861. If he said there's no reason for this, he would have said it from the grave. And if anybody heard it, it might have sounded like, there's no reason for this, which would be kind of hard to translate in the first place. People don't realize, you know, the Civil War, if you think about it, why? A lot has been said about that statement in the last few days. I don't know if this has. That is one of the most subtle dog whistles to racists that I've lately seen. Because it doesn't come right out and say what the heritage not hate crowd says. Well, the Civil War was not about, was never about slavery. It was about the economic oppression that the Yankees was a putting upon the good God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered Southern planter class. They say that shit, you know. So instead, Trump just dog whistles to his base, who, you know, faithful readers of that website that rhymes with light and fart, people who register and chat over at Stormfront or White Resistance or Wingnut Daily and or all of those places, wherein resides the seditious, racist, anti-constitutional, underbelly of our body politic. People don't realize, you know, the Civil War, if you think about it, why? people don't ask that question. But why was there a civil war? Why could that one not have been worked out? Virtually the entirety of the history of the United States of America prior to 1860 is a history of trying to work that out. No, screw that. Going all the way back to the Constitutional Convention. No, that too. Going back to the drafting of the Declaration of Independence. That was the question. You might recall that Thomas Jefferson, young and idealistic as he was, wanted to talk in the Declaration of Independence about getting rid of slavery.
But the representatives of places like North Carolina and South Carolina and Georgia
refused to have any part of it because their entire economy was predicated upon the vicious abuse of other human beings. And in fact, the deemed title fee simple ownership of those human beings. It gets a little bit more interesting, though, because that statement, why could that one not have been worked out, goes hand in hand with Trump's vision of himself as deal maker extraordinaire. What he is in essence saying there is that he would have been a better president in 1861 or maybe 1856 than Abraham Lincoln was in 1861 or James Buchanan was in 1856. There's maybe a credible argument about James Buchanan because he was practically no president at all. The only thing that he really did was periodically James Buchanan of Pennsylvania would buy slaves in D.C. and surreptitiously ship them across into Pennsylvania where they would be freed. He did this to salve his own guilt over the fact that he let the southern states run roughshod over him, possibly, partially, because his lover was a senator from the state of Alabama, a man named Senator King, referred to by his colleagues in the United States Senate as Nancy. Courtesy of Carol Baker. This just in from the news desk, Frederick Douglass is still dead. Back to you, Biff. Thank you, Carol. Carol also noting, pro tip for the pumpkin spice Hitler, less Twitter, more Ken Burns, not saying, just saying. Who here would volunteer to sit down and watch the full Ken Burns Civil War documentary? With Comrade Kumquat. Wouldn't that be something? Anyway, this morning on Morning Joe, presidential historian and Andrew Jackson biographer John Meacham appeared to talk about the whole Trump-Andrew Jackson kerfuffle. He interviewed Trump, you see. And in the course of the conversation, the following colloquy ensued.
President of the United States, who says, hey, nobody's ever asked the question, why did we have a civil war? Is, again, I know of no adult in my 54 years of living that would ever come close to uttering that question.
You know, it's a projection of the president's fundamental and enveloping narcissism. Because he believes, he told me a year and a half ago or so, a year ago, that, you know, he thought he could have done a deal to have averted the war. So, you know, it's like the scene from The Tempest where Miranda comes out and says, oh, brave new world that has such people in it. And her father says, 'tis new to thee. You know, he's in an enforced, you know, as Doris knows, the presidency itself enhances your fundamental characteristics. It's very hard once you're there to change. Some people mm-hmm. do, and that's why we talk about them as great presidents. But most people, once they're in the Oval Office, actually just become more like themselves. And I think in this case, that's on a potentially tragic trajectory.
You kind of got to wonder what he means by tragic trajectory. But I also have to give him a cowbell, or, well, okay, I don't think we've ever done this before. A cowbell for the Shakespeare reference. Trump is like Miranda in The Tempest, who says, O brave new world that hath such people in it, to which her father Prospero the wizard replies, 'tis new to thee. Now, there's no risk of anybody showing that clip to Trump, and Trump himself having the perspicacity to recognize that he has just been academically burnt right to the ground, all the way to cinders. Because what that Shakespeare quote means, Miranda has never seen human beings other than herself, and, well, if Caliban is a human being, you know, there's a debate about that. And of course there's the fairy Ariel who flits about the island, but that's it. And until the shipwreck that is the result of the said tempest takes place, she's never seen another human being. And the people who are shipwrecked on the island are venal, greedy, grasping, comical, tragic. And it overwhelms sweet Miranda's senses. And so when she says, O brave new world that hath such people in it, or it's new to thee. Which is a way of saying, well, yeah, I guess if you've never been exposed to any of this stuff before. So what John Meacham is saying is that Donald Trump is amazed by things that he learns, or pseudo-learns, at this stage of his life because he had no idea it ever existed before. Because he is, in fact, a deeply ignorant man. You know, Meacham doesn't want to come right out and say, and this is part of the problem. Later in the program, or perhaps earlier, I don't remember because it was early for me too. Joe and Mika went on to say that they are disturbed by the conduct of the Pumpkin Pasha. And, yeah, okay. I'll take cards in that game. Mark Halperin was there, Barnacle was there, Mika was there, Joe was there, and the following the following was heard. We hope. Come on. There we go. Someday. Very old computer. Okay, this does get frustrating. Now, let's try this again.
Let's give more.
Just for everybody that out there that's asking why this discussion, why now?
Because this is a grave discussion.
Because it has gotten considerably worse, even over, I think, the past, as Douglas Brinkley said, over the past 24, 48 hours, have been some of the most confounding, confusing. It seems to be among the most bizarre recent 24 hours in American presidential history. Was all just surreal, disarray, and a confused mental state from the president. And I had asked twice what was going on with his mind before I read this from Doug Brinkley. We followed Donald Trump. The last 24 hours have been far different, even from what we saw last year.
All the examples we've talked about, I think, are legit to talk about, but I'm really mostly focused on North Korea.
Right, I know, but we understand. I think that's the most serious thing. I'm asking you generally, though, does the president, do you agree with Douglas Brinkley that that perhaps the past 24 hours have been perhaps Donald Trump at his most confused?
Well, I wouldn't go so far as to diagnose him as Brinkley seems to do from afar, but there's no doubt that this interview is more than 24 hours.
Okay,
the Associated Press interview.
What about the bizarre? Yeah. What about the last week?
Yeah.
It's bizarre. Then we'll attach bizarre. Has this been the most bizarre week?
Yes, and it's in a period when not just the end of the symbolic end of the 100 days, but when he's dealing with the North Korea nuclear situation, with the health care of tens of millions of Americans. That example, which we haven't really talked about, not understanding about the question of what's in the House bill, that level of confusion.
Explain how he didn't know what was in the House bill.
I mean, there's some debate. The Wall Street Journal editorial page tries to bail him out a little bit, but there's no doubt that people with pre-existing conditions will be in a worse-off shape in some parts of the country, at least, if the House bill ever became law. And he's going around saying, no effect, people with pre-existing conditions will still be protected. I'm all for talking about the broad sweep of the last week, but what I'm saying is, for North Korea, for people worried about their health care, this lack of clarity, this sloppy talk, has real implications.
But it's almost like you're pinpointing those two topics. Like, let's analyze what he said about those and be on a policy level and have a conversation. We're going to say what maybe no one said. We'll do it again. I'm not sure he's okay.
Well, I mean, look, I think there's
I'm not sure he's okay. You have that feeling with people who are not okay, where it starts to dawn on you that they are not okay.
That it's getting worse. That it's getting worse. And
it's a much bigger issue.
Worse than it has been. And you talk about the AP interview and these other interviews. The president of the United States saying, gee, this is a lot harder than my last job was. There's not a human being on the face of the earth that wouldn't understand that you were stepping into the most difficult job of your life. Just look at pictures of presidents walking in and walking out of the White House. And then he said, gee, this is really hard. Every day's really hard.
Joe Scarborough is dancing around saying the words 25th Amendment like Baryshnikov on meth. And Mika's doing the same thing. I don't know if it's because of orders from higher up or if it's because they're afraid. I don't know why. But the answer is obvious. It is time. It is past time for the 25th Amendment to be invoked to remove Donald Trump from office because he is, in the language of the amendment, unable to discharge the duties of the office. This country cannot afford a man sunk in the depths of dementia with his finger on the button. As Steve in New York, a member of the fraternity of Steve, said, what you just said about short-term memory probably explains what people say about him, that he adopts the position of the last person he's spoken to. Yeah. It's not just that he's incurious. It is that he is badly compromised in his cognition for whatever reason. Sylvia, with a note, says, you could say that the slave owners could, in the same circumstances today, be prosecuted as receivers of stolen goods, since their property was ripped away from their homes in Africa, in essence, stolen. You could indeed. And James, perhaps in a wistful moment, says, if only we had a president as wise as Donald Trump, we could solve Syria, Iraq, Iran, Korea, the Mexican border with drug war, Colombia, Venezuela, and the Philippines. So Trump thinks that he could have prevented the Civil War, but he can't even manage North Korea, Iraq, Syria, the drug war in Mexico, Colombia, Venezuela, and the Philippines, whose brutal and bloodthirsty president, Duterte, will be welcomed with all pomp and circumstance, including the excitement of Donald J. Trump, to the White House. Meanwhile, responding to the clip I just played, Brother Deacon Asa says, you're not sure he's okay now, Mika? What the... We've been saying he's not okay since he ran the first time in 2012. Hashtag. I don't know that we've ever had a cowbell hashtag before. Hashtag, 'tis new to thee. That, by God, Asa, was brilliant. It's like Mika has awoken from a slumber and, rubbing her little eyes with her little fists, has blinked them open for the first time to gaze upon this brave new world that has such trumples in it. But to me, and it's not just Joe and Mika. It's John Dickerson over at CBS, whom Trump stood there and offended to his face. And then at the end of the process, simply walked away from as if he had forgotten that he was in an interview. Dickerson tried to press him on the business of saying that Barack Obama had him wiretaped and that he called Obama sick and bad. And Trump said something along the lines of, well, you can take it any way you want. And he said, well, do you stand by your words? You can take it any way you want. I don't stand by anything. Holy shit. And of course, if you read any of the stuff out there about considerations of the 25th Amendment, talk about it topically, but they don't want to just jump out there. And they especially don't want to say why. And to say that Trump is mad as a March hare. I think there are elements of Trump that have always been who he was. He's always been Trump, but he's never been like this. But they will not say. And I guess it's because in the world of the for-profit, yeah, there will be hell to pay for the first person who does say. That it is time for him to be removed from office via the mechanisms of the 25th Amendment. Because understand what will happen in that moment. I mean, we've said it here in our little community, and we're lucky we can do it because wingnuts are banned here. They are not allowed on this program. So we have a safe space in which to say it. But if somebody like Joe Scarborough, or maybe John Dickerson, says outright it is time to consider removing Donald Trump from office under the mechanisms of the 25th Amendment, that person's life, whoever says it, that person's life will be in immediate jeopardy. And it won't be theoretical, it will be real. Because in that moment, someone, perhaps someone who was at the great big NRA Clavern rally this past weekend, will start thinking about getting their freedom protector out and going and doing away with whoever it was that said that. That risk is very real. And to get Shakespearean again for a moment, I recall Falstaff in, the second part of Henry IV, who simply says, as an explanation for fleeing the battlefield, discretion is the better part of valor. In other words, as long as Mika and Joe just say things like, he's not okay, this is scary, he's not right, then they will not have immediately put themselves in the crosshairs of some Trumpansy's weapon. Or a whole lot of Trumpansy's weapons. Because, see, that 36% or so of American people who still approve of the job that Donald J. Trump is doing, that's the hardcore that propelled him through the Republican primaries, okay? He's never going to get much above 40%, most likely. It was said that he couldn't win the presidency because he couldn't rise above that 40%. But with a perfect storm of events and actions and the operation of a relic of our slave-holding past, to wit, the Electoral College, he did become president. But for that less than 40%, Donald Trump is the answer to their fondest wishes. Donald Trump is standing up against those uppity Negroes and those mouthy women and those Mexican rapists and those Sharia law-toting Muslims. See how it works? And maybe just plain bowel-watering fear is what keeps millionaires like Joe and Mika from stating the obvious. That the 25th Amendment exists for a reason, and that the reason for which the 25th Amendment exists is on display for us right here, right now, in 3D IMAX vividness in the form of Donald Trump. I acknowledge that possibility. The Mac says, I'm glad you're addressing this issue. This clearly demonstrates that the MILF is out of control and lacking judgment to be in his current position. In addition, his appointments only bolster the argument for his incompetence. It would be nice to hear Attorney General Sessions acknowledge that his very name may make large segments of the American population skeptical of his freedom from bias. Sessions should make a conciliatory statement to this effect. Thanks, Todd. Thanks. In an email titled Brains, Trump versus W, Michael in Madison says, Bob, I know I'm preaching to the choir here, but I think it's worth pointing out for any in the audience who might be skeptical. I don't recall this 25th Amendment concern being raised during the reign of error by the likes of Bob Kincaid, Joe Scarborough, or anyone in between. Oh, sure, we all hated W's ass. Sure, we wanted his ass impeached. But that man was just dumb. Hateful, too. And a liar. War criminal. And Count Dicula's hand puppet, sure. But mostly, he was just plain dumb. There wasn't much there to begin with, but generally W was all there. As an editorial aside, I'll recall the fact that a lot of us were convinced that he was an untreated alcoholic, a term often referred to as a dry drunk. But yeah, I'm in agreement with Michael. I've thought about this very thing, and I'm glad Michael brought it up. There is a vast gulf of difference between W and Trump. Under a properly functioning system, W should have been impeached, and so should Count Dicula. But we did not have a functioning system. Our constitutional system of governance has been in a state of rather profound dysfunction since Iran-Contra, the 80s, Reagan. But to let Michael finish his email, this with Trump is very different. Like W, there wasn't much there to begin with, but Trump ain't all there anymore, and he's getting less there by the hour. It is scary, and he's not okay, and it's not okay. It isn't. And in conjunction with the excitement of welcoming a man who's got death squads wandering over all over his nation in the form of Duterte of the Philippines, or saying he would be willing to sit down with a sharp cookie, a smart cookie. That's what he called him, wasn't it? A smart cookie. Hey, you're a smart cookie, sonny. With a smart cookie, like Kim Jong Crazy Pants over in North Korea. I can never remember. Okay, Kim Il-sung, Kim Jong-il, Kim Jong-un? Is that it? Have I got it? Yeah. He's a smart cookie. And Donald Trump would sit down to negotiate with him. Jesus Christ, we'd all lose all our cookies. And yet, the Congress of the United States continues to refuse to act. And whether it be from cowardice or because of orders on high, members of the for-profit media refuse to say the obvious. And for every minute that passes that the obvious is not spoken by the members of the for-profit media, for whatever reason, the danger to this nation increases. Note coming in from Steve, a member of the fraternity of Steve. Power mad, mad power. If the Congress doesn't represent the interests of the people, it certainly embodies the very highest interests of those in power. So whose failure is it anyway? This massive disaster is systemic and probably not fixable. They have their mad king paid for and fully vetted. I guess the rest of us are left with the literary reference and the electoral college. Regards, Steve in China. When literary references are what you got left, literary references are what you got left. But the Congress is at the center of this. Oh, but Bob, it says in the 25th Amendment, Section 4, that the cabinet has to do this. We've talked about this. It does say that. It says that the half of the cabinet can sign off on a letter saying that the president is unable to discharge the duties of his office. And we have talked in the past about what a difficult thing this is. Whenever the vice president and a majority of either the principal officers of the executive departments or of such other bodies as Congress may by law provide, transmit to the President pro tempore of the Senate and the Speaker of the House of Representatives their written declaration that the President is unable to discharge the powers and duties of his office, the Vice President shall immediately assume the powers and duties of the office as acting President. I know I kind of read that through that rather quickly, but you get what it says there. The Vice President, in order to trigger the 25th Amendment, this is what has to happen. The vice president and majority of the principal officers of the executive departments. So that means that elderly Lego man vice president Mike Pencil Neck Geek, in addition to someone like Betsy DeVos or Ben Carson, James Mattis, Robert McMasters, John Kelly, Wilbur Ross, etc., that a bunch of those have to sign off on the same letter saying that Donald J. Trump is unable to fulfill, to discharge the powers and duties of his office. At which point we have sort of agreed in the past and sadly so, ain't likely to happen unless and until such time as elderly Lego man Mike Pencil Neck Geek gets hungry enough for power, or is convinced by the voices in his head that he thinks are God that it's time for him to act, it's not going to happen. Ah, but there's a way out. Because the people who drafted the 25th Amendment wanted to have something more than the cabinet as the decision-making body. They included the words, or of such other body as Congress may by law provide. That means if things get squirrely enough, the Congress can set up a commission. A bill starts in the Senate or a bill starts in the House. It doesn't matter in this case. And they set up a commission to determine the fitness of the president to discharge the powers and duties of his office. And then, if they determine that he is unable, and they transmit such finding to the President Pro Tem of the Senate and the Speaker of the House, then, zing! Donald Trump is not president anymore. And Mike Pence, soul neck geek, the elderly Lego man, becomes acting president. Not president. Acting president. If you read the 25th Amendment closely, you will find that Mike Pencilneck Geek, the elderly Lego man, would never become the president of the United States. He would be acting president. And there's a whole complicated process in Section 4 that we've been over in the past. And it becomes a battle of certifications, really. But what's important to note at this juncture is that there is a way out if only the Congress will do its job. And that, to get all Shakespearean again, therein lies the rub. Aye, there's the rub. Because that means a whole lot of Congress people being willing to put on the target, to put a target on their fronts and backs, and perhaps the backs of their heads and their little congressional foreheads, and say that no matter what the Trumpanzees may think, if in fact what Trumpanzees do may be referred to as thinking, that the president is unable to discharge the duties of his office. That's going to require a whole bunch. Well, it's going to require all the Democrats. And it's going to require a significant number of Republicans. And when they do it, when they do it, because he's proven it in the past that he's proven in the past that he's more than willing to do this. Remember when he said that the members of the Freedom Caucus who opposed Tryon Care? Remember when he said that he would come after them in their districts and try to have them defeated in 2018? Yeah. Well, when the members of Congress do this, the Trumpanzees, at the behest of Donald Trump, will go bloodthirsty mad. And what I have for years described in this country as a cold civil war, to a certain extent, may become a hot one. So we've got that to think about. On the other hand, I'll make the argument that if people like Joe Scarborough or George Snuffleupagus or Jake Tapper or John Dickerson or any of the others, if they will start, if someone will start and the rest will follow, then it may actually get the attention of enough members of the cabinet that the cabinet will do it and keep the Congress from having to. But by whatever means, we are in deep, deep trouble. And we, and by any measure, we are in, well, let's put it in horror movie terms. Like it or not, we've already gone into the basement against the best judgment of everybody in the audience. Clarity pointing out, because I was talking about, you know, if you're a member of the Horn community, you've been ahead of the curve for a long time on this 25th Amendment business. And Clarity said being ahead of the curve did little for Cassandra. Ah, but you see, there's a difference. The only reason it didn't do anything for Cassandra was because Cassandra was cursed by Apollo. Because why, if we think about our Greek mythology, Cassandra wouldn't get it on with Apollo. And so he cursed her with foreknowledge, but said, here's the fun part, nobody's going to believe you. I don't believe that we are so cursed. I believe that understanding that believe is the most dangerous word in the English language. I believe that maybe we're germinating a seed. That maybe what we talk about here has a chance to grow. We have been talking about it here for quite some time, and then lo and behold, suddenly I'm seeing 25th Amendment articles out there. Maybe it's just a matter of becoming part of the quantum of consciousness. Hard to say. Clarity said, wow. Even the shills are starting to see the emperor's new holes. Hashtag Mercury Madness. Clarity also pointing out that 40-something percent brought us Bubba Clinton. Yeah, about 48% of the vote in 1992. Also worth noting, however, that in terms of popular opinion, in the aftermath, not before, but in the aftermath of the whole impeachment imbroglio, Bubba had something on the order of a 76% approval rating. I don't. Maybe some conflagration will raise Trump's numbers. That was certainly their hopes in dropping the Moab and putting on that fireworks show in Syria. But it didn't work, did it? No. I suspect we've got... we've got a 40% president for as long as he remains in office. And I got a feeling a bunch of us are going to go out and find somewhere online to watch The Buccaneer, featuring Yul Brynner, starring Yul Brynner as the swashbuckler Jean Lafitte, sometime in the near future. courtesy of Carol Baker on the spiral notebook paper. Donald Trump, room 1600. The Civil War, S-I-V-E-L. Andrew Jackson was a very tough person, but he had a big heart, H-A-R-T. Person, P-E-R-S-U-N. If he had been a little later, you wouldn't have had the Civil War. He said there's no reason for this. It is, in fact, the words of Donald J. Trump reduced to their more natural circumstances. A not particularly good third grade one-page essay. Yeah, 43% for Bubba. That's that was the electoral margin. Whereas what we're talking about, thank you, James. Whereas we're talking about the difference between, we're talking about approval ratings, which are different things. Okay, we are just a little bit over halfway through the program this evening. I've been filibobstering along quite merrily. We'll take a break, it being a Tuesday, even though it feels to me very much like a Monday. We'll take a break and check in with Brad and Desi in the Green News Report. I mentioned earlier we had $300 to raise this evening. We are still at zero. Hopefully that will change in the next hour and 24 minutes or so. But thank you to the overnight crew, our subscribers, and thank you very kindly to the Angry Architect in Australia. And the Angry Architect provided some help or some information that may well bear going into later in the evening. But yes, thanks to them, we'll finish tonight's fundraising and take care of tomorrow by raising $300. And that way, come Thursday, we won't be in a $500 hole. Okay? I mean, I'm sorry. I wish there was some other way to keep this program going. We give a shout out to George Soros every evening. So far, bupkis. So let's cross our fingers. All right, then. Break time. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. Bumper suggestion courtesy of Michael and Madison.
Did you read the news too?
Tuesday, May 2nd, 2017.
I'm here to make a statement about the stupidity of denying climate change.
The People's Climate March draws hundreds of thousands in the sweltering heat. Trump's EPA deletes climate change from its website. Last-minute government funding deal ignores Trump's proposed environmental cuts. Largest electric utility in Iowa to go 100% renewable. Plus,
this executive order starts the process of opening offshore areas to job-creating energy exploration.
Trump rolls back oil spill safety regulations implemented after the BP Gulf oil disaster.
All of those disasters and more straight ahead from bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
We talk about Assad gassing people. We're gassing them, too. We're just doing it slower with CO2.
Ouch. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, it seems only appropriate that we would have record-breaking heat at the end of April on the day that the people are marching for climate.
Yes, yes, it does. It was a massive People's Climate March that flooded the streets of Washington, D.C. on a sweltering Saturday. Official estimates put it at about 200,000 people, larger than the March for Science and a certain president's inauguration. In D.C. and nearly 400 sister marches around the country, the Climate March united a broad spectrum of environmental groups, Native American, labor, and racial justice organizations demanding action on climate change and blasting the Trump administration's aggressive anti-environment cutbacks on the 100th day of his presidency.
If something isn't done, the stakes are enormous because they're talking about more pollution that's going to put more pollution in the air, like arsenic and mercury, in our water, and that affects the air our kids breathe and the water they drink.
The organizers of the Climate March say the goal now is to rally the public to defend pollution protections and spur voters to vote for climate hawk candidates in the 2018 congressional elections. As you mentioned, the day of the march tied the record for the hottest April 29th in D.C. history. But worse, the night before the march, a significant temperature record was broken when overnight temperatures failed to cool down and drop below 70 degrees. That's the first time that's ever happened in any April in the District of Columbia. The day before the climate march, President Donald Trump signed an executive order to expand offshore drilling in Arctic and Atlantic regions previously protected by President Obama. But that order also rolled back safety regulations on offshore drilling that were put in place after the BP oil disaster in the Gulf.
Because of course it did.
Yep, that was the worst in the nation's history.
The executive order or the BP oil spill?
That's a good question. Trump's order also explicitly removed Native American tribes in Alaska from their seat on the Bering Sea Advisory Council.
Yeah, well, remember, he's a big fan of Andrew Jackson, who didn't like Native Americans either.
Nope. The night before the march, the Trump administration's Environmental Protection Agency deleted nearly all references to climate change from its website, including info on the causes and impacts of climate change that have been in place since 1997. The site now says it's being updated to remove outdated information and will be rewritten to reflect the agency's new direction under President Trump, and that removing the information was necessary to prevent confusion.
Outdated information, eh?
Yeah. The Interior Department also quietly stripped its pages of information on climate change and its impact on public lands.
Hey, if it's not on the website, it didn't happen.
Meanwhile, a deal reached in Congress late Sunday night to avoid a shutdown and fund the government through September does not contain drastic budget cuts proposed by the Trump administration.
Does not contain?
Nope. The EPA gets a 1% budget cut, but no staff cuts. If Trump signs the deal, budget increases are in store for the National Parks Service, NOAA, and the Department of Energy's Renewable Energy and Energy Efficiency Programs.
But I thought Donald Trump was insisting on a 30% cut to the EPA.
Oh, he still is. That will just have to wait until later.
So sad.
Plus, some good news, the deal also extends permanent funding for retired coal miners' health care. In Ohio, the company that owns the controversial Dakota Access Pipeline, Energy Transfer Partners, reported spilling 2 million gallons of drilling fluids into two Ohio wetlands. gallons in the process of constructing a 700-mile pipeline. The Ohio EPA says the spilled drilling fluid isn't exactly toxic, but the sheer volume of 2 million gallons could affect water chemistry and potentially suffocate wildlife. Finally, some good news. The largest electric utility in Iowa is going 100% renewable. MidAmerica Energy is investing $2 billion to build more than 1,000 new wind turbines with the goal of generating 100% of its electricity from clean sources within 2 years. The CEO says wind energy keeps electricity rates down because, quote, the beauty of wind is there's no fuel costs.
Way to go, Iowa. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Find us, follow us, and share us on the Facebooks and the Twitters at Green News Report. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Iowa.
Didn't see that bumper coming. Of course, I didn't know that bumper existed. Now I'll get an email from somebody saying, what do you mean? You've never heard that? Oh, my God. What a Philistine you are. Oh, well, whatever. This is the horn for Titanic Tuesday, the second day of May, 2017. It is 12 minutes before the hour. And let's run over to the phones and check in with a long-suffering someone who's been on hold for a while I finished out the filibobster. Hey, welcome to the program. Oh, well, they gave up just as I was coming to them. Dadgummit. Good news. Thank you to Angelica, and thank you to Keith. Fundraising goal is now down to $250. And over the course, during the break, I got a note from Ralphs. Hey, Bob, I'm putting a $25 challenge on the table, so the next 25 bucks that comes in will get doubled. And that will take us down to $200 in fundraising to go, which would be mighty nice, and provide us a fighting chance at reaching, not having a hole when I get back on Thursday. Again, a reminder, no program tomorrow night. I'm going over to Beckley to talk about the AIC Act with some folks who are affected by, you know, coal poisons in their air and may not even know about it. So it's worthwhile. I appreciate your forbearance. Back for Thorn in the Side Thursday. So again, $25 matching challenge on the table, courtesy of Ralphs, to go alongside what Keith and Angelica just did, which will take us down to only $200 to go to finish out fundraising for the evening. Okay. Let's do some. That was a long filibobster, but I felt like it was necessary and worthwhile. You, of course, may have your own judgment. But okay, so Titanic intellect, right? The brand new head of the Republican Party is a woman by the name of Jennifer Carnahan. She just became chair of the GOP in Minnesota last week. And the goddess of irony immediately took notice of her. The goddess of irony's pink little ears perked up. When Jennifer Carnahan said, upon becoming chair of the Minnesota Republican Party, people are going to have a really hard time calling us the party of racists and sexists now. This is because Jennifer Carnahan was adopted as an infant from South Korea and raised, God knows why, as a Republican in Minnesota. Mm-hmm. People are going to have a really hard time calling us the party of racists and sexists. And the goddess of irony said, oh, you just can't do that. That's not really Minnesota nice. And so the goddess of irony reached down and touched touched the Minnesota GOP, in particular the Minnesota 7th Congressional District Republican Party, who put up a Facebook post. It said, David Horowitz says we are in a war. The Minnesota's Keith Ellison is a raving Louis Farrakhan supporting anti-Semite, anti-white, racist and fascist American, and our current representative Colin Peterson takes this lunatic turkey hunting. So what the Minnesota 7th Congressional District Republican Party Facebook page did was post a meme showing Representative Keith Ellison, America's first Muslim member of Congress, all decked out in his turkey hunting togs. You know, in spring gobbler season, you camo up real, real good. You don't wear anything red. And you slip off into the woods with a shotgun, maybe a 12-gauge or so, some four-shot. And you sit there and you try to call in a gobbler with your turkey call. No, yeah, actually, you don't use a gobbler call. You use a hen caller. There's a scratch one, and there's one you put in your mouth. And never mind. Right. And Congressman Ellison, co-chair of the Democratic National Committee, and I presume still co-chair of the Congressional Progressive Caucus, got himself a turkey. He killed a gobbler. And like any happy hunter, any proud hunter, especially where turkey, what you do is when you kill your gobbler, you take a picture of the gobbler with the tail feathers all fanned out. And that's exactly what the photo is. I realize we're talking about photography on the radio. I understand. But it's the words that matter. So once the photograph went around, the Minnesota 7th Congressional District Republican Party turned that photograph of Representative Keith Ellison proudly displaying his trophy turkey into a meme. The meme said, in reference to the 7th Congressional District Representative Colin Peterson, a Democrat, also a member of the Minnesota Democratic Farm Labor Party. The meme said, Colin Peterson has been sliding up to Minnesota's head Muslim goat humper, Keith Ellison. Heck, they're now hunting buddies. Does that mean Muslim refugees coming to western Minnesota? See, brand new GOP chair Jennifer Carnahan, all you had to do was keep your mouth shut and not use your ethnicity as some form of what is disparagingly referred to as identity politics, and say that because you, a person who was adopted as an infant from South Korea, were now the chair of the Minnesota GOP, that people are going to have a really hard time calling us the party of racists and sexists. Well, no, not really. I'd say referring to a sitting member of Congress as Minnesota's head Muslim goat is going to do a pretty good job at enabling people to refer to your party as a party of racists. Oh, Miss Carnahan. If I were you, I would get a truckload of rubber chickens and sacrifice them at midnight, so maybe the goddess of irony will get off your ass. Because she's got your number. She's absolutely got your number. What else? Oh my God, so much else. I said that we might have a little pre-prayer meeting Wednesday information, and we will. Let's check in with the Iowa City Press Citizen, seeing as how we had that nice bumper music there from Brad and Desi a few minutes ago. The Iowa City Press Citizen recently published a story about a young Christian man and an author of books for children. Jesus, all I had to do was say young Christian man and author of books about children. And you already know the rest of the story. You don't you? Of course you do. Benjamin C. Tweet. No, really. Benjamin C. Tweet, T-W-E-E-D-T, aged 32, of North Liberty, Iowa, author of children's books, church youth leader, and private school teacher, has been busted for his practice over the course of several years of fondling or inappropriately having sexual interactions with at least four children between the ages of 11 and 13. One count, third-degree sexual abuse, two counts of lascivious acts with a child, fondle or touch. Both of those are Class C felonies. He was the youth leader and mentor at Parkview Church in Iowa City since 2004. The church reported the allegations to police in February. At the same time, the church said, well, I mean, he was a volunteer here, but we never employed him. Therefore, please don't send a contact. Please don't contact our insurance carrier. Please don't contact our insurance carrier. Right. And, of course, from 2009 to 2013, he taught at Heritage Christian School. Remember, Betsy DeVos, who has no real school experience herself, but is Secretary of Education, Betsy DeVos wants your tax dollars to go to places like Heritage Christian School in North Liberty, Iowa. When he was at the church, he had, according again to the Iowa Press Citizen, the Iowa City Press Citizen, he had multiple contacts, one-on-one visits with children. And that's, according to the police, when most of the abuse occurred. The stuff would take place in homes and at church retreats in North Liberty and Coralville, Iowa. The Iowa City Press Citizen reporting tweet would play a game. God, this is disgusting. He would play a game in the name of Jesus, where he would use his finger to touch victims. He'd start on their upper body and continue touching them down to the waistband area of the child. Sometimes he'd touch them over the clothes. Other times he would put his hand under the child's waistband and shirt. According to the police report, at one point in time, Tweet laid down on a couch and cuddled with a boy who said he could feel Tweet's erect penis pushed against his backside. Back in 2013, he was alone in a sleeping area with a victim and got into the victim's twin bed and spooned with the child. And we were just spooning. Back in 2006, he asked one child, "Do you know how long my penis is?" go into the bathroom with the the kid's own penis. Go into the bathroom with a ruler. Oh my God, no. There was buttocks massaging. God is love, y'all. Then, of course, this from Reuters. Today, a ruling came down from a federal appeals court. The court revived the lawsuit for damages against Sister Clerk Kim Davis. You remember Sister Clerk Kim Davis? It was two years ago, 2015, when she said she, having been thrice married, pretty obviously an adulteress within the biblical meaning of the word, not that I adhere to it. She said Jesus and her faith in Christ Jesus would not let her give a marriage license to same-sex couples. Well, today, the 6th United States Circuit Court of Appeals, sitting in Cincinnati, declared that David Ermold and David Moore still have a right to pursue a suit for damages against Sister Clerk Kim Moore, as represented by pettifogging hustler Matt Staver of Liberty Counsel, and it's all tax-free. Hallelujah. The case was on appeal, and the lower court had said that the claim for damages was mooted out. It became irrelevant, not a thing that can be sued over, when Kentucky passed a law that said Sister Clerk Kim Davis didn't have to sign marriage license forms. In the article, in the opinion, the circuit judge Karen Nelson Moore said, no relation to David Moore, the plaintiff, "The district court's characterization of this case as simply contesting the no marriage licenses policy is inaccurate because Ermold and Moore did not seek an injunction. They sought only damages. The record does not support an argument that their damages claims are insubstantial or otherwise foreclosed." Meanwhile, pettifogging hustler Matt Staver said, "The ruling keeps the case alive for a little while, but it is not a victory for the plaintiffs. We are confident we will prevail." You know what? If Mr. Ermold and Mr. Moore prevail by so much as a dime, it will be a monumental victory. Because it will show these nasty-ass bigots that they can't get away. They cannot get away. With acts of such disgusting bigotry. That's Kentucky. Let's move across the Big Sandy River into West Virginia, and particularly into Gilmer County, West Virginia, where there was a Sister Clerk Kim Davis wannabe. The Washington Post reporting that Samantha Brookover and Amanda Abramovich wanted to get married. It was September 2014. Same-sex marriage had just become legal here in Almost Level West by Cold Trump, Virginia. And they went running off to the Gilmer County Courthouse so they could make honest women of each other, as the saying goes. So when they went to the clerk's office to get a marriage license, the clerk turned them away because
The clerk said, y'all can't have a marriage license without you both got a driver's license. We don't allow non-driving. We don't allow non-drivers to get married in West Virginia. No, really? They tried that. Then the couple found out that, of course, the good Christian, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical deputy clerk had been lying to them. And they went back. February 3rd, 2016, they went to get their marriage license again at the Gilmer County Courthouse. Deputy Clerk Debbie Allen greeted them by launching, quote, into a tirade of harassment and disparagement as the minute that she set eyes upon them. And she started filling out the paperwork, but she did so while slamming papers on her desk and screaming at the women that they were an abomination. And I may have to give you a marriage license, but God will deal with you, harlots. No, okay, they didn't call them harlots. The worst part of it all, on this proud and joyous day, Miss Brookover's mama, her stepfather, and her three-year-old niece were all there in the courthouse with the happy until that moment couple. And in a lawsuit that they have filed, the suit says that deputy clerk, upstanding Bible-believing, God-fearing, Christ-centered, evangelical, deputy clerk Allen said, ain't nobody in Gilmer County gonna marry you. The minute your same-sex marriages become legal, every single person in Gilmer County refused to do any more marriages. Mm-hmm. The county clerk, Gene Butcher, upon being contacted by Ms. Brookover's mother, said, staff did nothing wrong, and next couple would get the same or worst. A week later, the Charleston Gazette asked the clerk about the interchange, and she said, I briefly and calmly told them what they were doing was wrong and God had judged them. But I was helpful, and I helped them like I would with any other couple. Over at the Americans United for Separation of Church and State blog, Ms. Brookover and Ms. Abramovich wrote, instead of the happiest day of our lives, we will forever remember our wedding day as one filled with fear. Deputy clerks, turns out that West Virginia would now for the first time be required clerks if they harassed, humiliated, or Ms. Brookover said, we don't go around to be gay whether you like it or not. We know everybody has their difference of opinion, but it's not a matter of your opinion as much as it is doing your job. It's hard to drive by the courthouse. It's hard to just deal with it. I feel like I was robbed of being a human on that day. Well, that's because she was. She was robbed of being of her humanity. And she was robbed of her humanity in the name of the God of love. And it's kind of sad that Ms. Brookover even had to say something like, we don't go around flaunting it in front of everyone. Because, see, if Ms. Brookover and Ms. Abramovich go walking down the sidewalk there in Glenville, county seat of Gilmer County, and they're holding each other's hands, all the Christians will say, look at them flaunting their lesbianness. Hetero couple goes down the other sidewalk holding hands. Isn't that sweet? They're in love. Got a long way to go to civilization yet, don't we? Sadly, yes,
We do. Danny, writing in from Baton Rouge. Subject line, oh no! Bob, because of your mention, I realized I was enjoying the luxury, albeit fleeting luxury, of not thinking of Sister Clark Kim Davis for almost a whole year. As wretched as it is to think of her, your commentary on lunatic, religious, and presidential persons is always a welcome and much-needed blessing. Praise Jeebus! Praise Danny. Thank you, Danny. Thank you very kindly for your kind words. Had some other kind words today from a first-time communicator. It was rather inspiring. I had a note from Mark. Hi, Bob. Mark, long-time, first-time contacting you from Anaheim, California, a.k.a. Anna Crime. Any crime. First of all, thank you for all you do. Found you through Mike and Kathy a few years ago. Then I found Dr. Bill O'Brien through you. I'm really missing Dr. Bill right now. Can you please update me on his status? And once again, this is one of those emails where if one person asks, I know a lot of other people are wondering. Dr. Bill's status, Dr. Bill's fine. But a couple of months back, or maybe a little more than a month ago, one of his teaching colleagues suffered a heart attack. And he was a history prof. And so the university reached out to Dr. Bill and said, listen, can you finish the course out? Can you finish teaching the course, please? So that these kids can get credit for the course that they signed up for, because otherwise they're out of a professor. And you know Dr. Bill. If there is a human being on the planet who can be described as the soul of kindness, it's Dr. Bill O'Brien. And Dr. Bill said, sure. And so Dr. Bill has been teaching and traveling quite a bit because he's doing it down in Montgomery, West Virginia, which is a right smart poke down the road from Beckley. Montgomery's down the mountain from me. From Beckley, it's even more complicated. Mountains are like that. They get in the way. Maybe that's why we need to blow them all up. But he's teaching all this time. And I, for one, would love to be sitting in the class because the course is called The History of Technology. And I don't know if Dr. John's listening, but if he is, I can hear Dr. John saying, ooh, that'd be real fun. Because the minute I heard History of Technology, I thought, okay, we're going to start with a sharp rock and a hominid creature who may not even be fully upright walking yet. And in the course of one tiny semester, we're going to get all the way to Facebook. That would be a heady little semester. So that's where Dr. Bill is. He'll be back in fairly short order. And I'm looking forward to it, and I know you are as well. Then Mark says, lastly, I'm one of the listeners who can't afford to contribute at this time. Thank you, personally, to those in the Horn family who do. I'd like to remind you how important your contributions are to those of us who temporarily cannot. Hang in there, and again, thank you. Peace and love, says Mark. Thank you, Mark. Thank you, Mark, very kindly for your first ever email. I look forward to hearing more. And I will also share your kind words with Dr. Bill. He will be he'll be tickled. I just got a note from Marty saying, lost you for a minute. Let me see what's going on here. Apparently the stream is gone. Damn it. Rat fart. I'm showing no buffering on this end, so that kind of means that we're dead over at the White Rose end. Thank you, Steve. Nicely said. Yes, sir. Bob streams as dead as Jacob Marley. Oh, goody. The server just went down. Well, just the same. Might as well continue for a little while longer. Because there's too much crazy out there to let go. And I do mean a lot. By the way, let me just say early on, or, well, this is too late to be early, isn't it? Let me mention, because I did not mention early on, my congratulations and my admiration for everyone who showed up at the People's Climate March this past weekend. Among others, I know our good friend Dr. Allen was there. He was keeping keeping eyes and ears open for mention of mountaintop removal, and said there had been some. So we know we were not completely forgotten. It's beginning to be a little bit of a problem. The problems of Appalachia that don't have to do with aggrieved white coal miners seems to be receding into the distance again. I guess that makes at least a little bit of my job trying to keep that from happening. But that was a mighty crowd of people who took time out to go to Washington, D.C., make their voices heard, march in the streets. I heard it was brutally hot that day. I remember an early May day in an action in front of the EPA back during the Obama administration, when a day that was supposed to be maybe a high of 91 got up to like 104 by the time you factored in the pavement. It was hot. So it wasn't just a matter of time and energy. It was also stamina that was required of the people who went to the People's Climate March. And my respect to all of them. All right, it's Titanic Tuesday and also a leftover of Moran Monday. So I think we're probably safe. Well, not just safe, but more like obliged to check in with
Alex Jones.
Now, Alex Jones lost his custody hearing. That did not, however, stop him from going in front of the Travis County Courthouse steps and orchestrating a little mini micro press gaggle in which to declare the rightness of his cause. Oh, joy. There may not be enough hockey pucks for this. but we'll find out. Now, this was ostensibly a press avail about Alex Jones's custody case. It quickly devolved, however, and I must say, delightfully so. I've come to really appreciate
Alex Jones
for his ability to take my mind away from the dangerous threat to the entire species level madness that we deal with on a daily basis. This is just garden variety Thorazine dart in the neck madness. And so he, as you may know, recently was sued by the CEO of Chobani. Because he,
Alex Jones,
alleged that the CEO of Chobani was orchestrating in a sort of comet ping pong pizza gate kind of way, an immigrant sexual assault ring in, of all places, Idaho. And so he remarked on that. And that led him into a tirade against the corporate media. Corporate establishment mercenary media who were perched in the courtroom, literally cherry-picking, twisting, and distorting everything.
You guys wonder why you have dwindling audiences and you don't have support. It's because you deceive people and you lie to people. Now, I know you people have corporate masters who order you to do that. You've got editors who add disinformation to your stories, but again, that's the bottom line. We're thinking of an aggressive corporate strategy to actually go after the New York Federal Reserve and the school lunch program that the CEO of Chobani is a part of.
Okay, that's wacky enough. Oh, but babies, then this. Get the hockey puck. Get the duct tape. Strap yourself into the chair like Ulysses strapped to the mast as he sailed between Scylla and Charybdis. Yeah, this is that good. Hang on tight.
Everything I do gets covered because they know the truth. We have up to 80 million viewers a week, always about 45 million. That's big. That's double the size of Rush Limbaugh. That's bigger than most Fox News shows throughout a whole week. So that's why there's so much demonization. That's why there's so many attacks. That's why there's so many misrepresentations.
No, mainly it's because you're just so damn much fun, Alex. Here it comes. I can't wait. I can't wait for this to get, because even though nobody can hear this live, if you hear it in podcast form, you're going to be hooting like a barn owl. I mean, he's said some nutty shit over the years, but oh,
Margaret,
this is past going pro. This is Hall of Fame stuff.
Is because that's where the media is. But it's a complex issue, and I would just, you know, ask folks to just wait and see what the ruling of the judge is, and I have faith in that, and I just want whatever's, you know, great for the kids. I hope the kids are with their mother more, as long as, you know, she's doing well. and as long as she's not, you know, dysregulating and stuff like that. And I get people are scared of Donald Trump. And you know, I get that it's like fun to then kind of pick some low-hanging fruit like myself and kind of make that the pinata and say that's the devil and stuff. And but I'm very critical of Trump, very critical of the Democrats.
Okay. Although he's not critical of Trump. And although he's, what did he describe himself as? A pinata? Is that the new secondary reference?
Alex Jones, meet pinata.
The tertiary reference.
Alex Jones, low-hanging fruit.
Critical of both political parties. That's really another manufactured mainstream media thing that where, I mean, I'm very happy about Trump on some issues, like trying to get our jobs back to America. I think it's terrible that Trump is talking about indicting Assange, who he said, if you got more stuff, give it to me. You know, Trump said, if you've got more WikiLeaks, give it to me, WikiLeaks.
By the way, just in case you're wondering, this entire clip is 29 minutes and 35 seconds long. I'm just playing a couple of minutes of it. What he did is he walked outside the courthouse and did his show, which he then uploaded as an InfoWars video. Mm-hmm. Clever. Clever.
I mean, that's totally wrong, and I've been critical of that for weeks. The media won't pick up on that because it's all just this distortion of where I stand and what I do. I'm not a Republican. I'm not a Democrat. I'm a libertarian. Let's take human-animal chimeras.
I'm not a Democrat. I'm not a Republican. Take human-animal chimeras. You see now why I played the clip? You can't just get this anywhere. This is up on the roof barking at the moon mad. I'm not a Democrat. I'm not a Republican. Take human-animal chimeras. Now, I admit that that is, and Republicans and right-wingers, white-wingers like Alex Jones often complain about being taken out of context. Well, I played you a bunch. I mean, we've been a good couple of minutes, a good minute or so of this so far. But if that was all we had out there, I'm not a Democrat, I'm not a Republican, I'm a libertarian, take human-animal chimeras. That would be kind of out of context, because whatever comes next, whatever comes after take human-animal chimeras has got to be comedy gold. Just got to. So, in the name of journalism and context, I'm going to go back and we're going to play a rock solid 30 seconds before we get to the chimera remark.
Media thing that where, I mean, I'm very happy about Trump on some issues, like trying to get our jobs back to America. I think it's terrible that Trump is talking about indicting Assange, who he said, if you got more stuff, give it to me. You know, Trump said, if you've got more WikiLeaks, give it to me, WikiLeaks. I mean, that's totally wrong. And I've been critical of that for weeks. The media won't pick up on that because it's all just this distortion of where I stand and what I do. I'm not a Republican. I'm not a Democrat. I'm a libertarian. Take human-animal chimeras. They have jokes all over TV saying Jones thinks they're crossing humans with pigs and cows. Well, 20 years ago, they were crossing humans and animals and growing them in utero for body parts. That's mainstream, you know, scientific journals. But this cameraman's laughing right here, right? This guy right here. I mean, you could type in human-animal chimeras, get 100,000 mainstream articles. But still, people are preconditioned to make a joke that it doesn't exist. Like Harvard saying fluoride lowers your IQ after just 2 years on 1.6 parts per million by at least 10 points, 12 points, 15 points. People just make jokes. They don't go look up the Harvard studies. It's all just funny because people are followers, and it makes them feel powerful to just laugh at stuff. I mean, here, let's talk to this camera guy. Because when I was talking about human-animal chimeras, he was laughing.
Okay, so at this point in time, just so you can know, he's pointed out that somebody was giggling about human-animal chimeras, and he walks over, and he takes away someone's selfie stick and begins talking directly to the cell phone that's on the selfie stick. Just so you can know what, when he, here, let's talk to the, yeah.
I mean, you know, scientific journals, but this cameraman's laughing right here, right? This guy right here. I mean, you could type in human-animal chimeras, get 100,000 mainstream articles. But still, people are preconditioned to make a joke that it doesn't exist. Like Harvard saying fluoride lowers your IQ after just 2 years on 1.6 parts per million by at least 10 points, 12 points, 15 points. People just make jokes. They don't go look up the Harvard studies. It's all just funny because people are followers, and it makes them feel powerful to just laugh at stuff. I mean, here, let's talk to this camera guy. Because when I was talking about human-animal chimeras, he was laughing. Do you not believe human-animal chimeras? Couldn't say one way or another. See, that's the smart thing. Like 1984. Spider goats, all of it. They'll probably play that. Probably have Colbert.
Spider goats.
Oh, look, spider goats. Do you have any idea how dangerous all these human-animal chimeras are? Do you have any idea the super viruses and the mutations that it's creating? That are cancer's way up, allergies are way up. This will affect your kids, man. This isn't funny.
No, it's not funny. And you know what's particularly not funny? The fact that Alex Jones has to go looking for human-animal chimeras as causes for cancer. When, in fact, not too terribly far from where he is, an unregulated, uninspected fertilizer plant blew up and sent particulate matter God knows how far into the surrounding area of West Texas. And there is no debate in the legitimate scientific community about the effect of fine and microfine particulates on the human body. And one of the things that there's no debate on is the fact that those particulates are often cancer-causing. But Alex Jones doesn't know a goddamn thing about particulates. And even though you could point to corporate America as a source of those particulates and corporate abuses and libertarian deregulation movements, of which he's most favorable, there will be no mention of that as long as he can prattle on about human-animal chimeras. See how it works? He talks about fluoride at 1.6 parts per billion in water, but has nothing to say about the fact that in Flint, Michigan, and in countless other communities across the United States, people are consuming lead, and that shit really does bring down your IQ on a considerable percentages on a generational level. Human animal chimeras. But as the Ginsu commercial goes, but wait, there's more.
Like 1984. Spider goats, all of it. They'll probably play that. Probably have Colbert go, oh, look, spider goats. Do you have any idea how dangerous all these human-animal chimeras are? Do you have any idea the super viruses and the mutations that it's creating? That are cancer's way up, allergies are way up. This will affect your kids, man. This isn't funny. I've had top scientists on about this.
Top scientists. The best people. The best top scientist people. Talks like Trump, doesn't he?
I mean, 20 years ago, they had rhesus monkeys you could buy in Hong Kong, you know, bazaars that glow in the dark that are part jellyfish.
Okay, that's what we were waiting for. 20 years ago, they had rhesus monkeys you could buy in the bazaars in Hong Kong that glowed in the dark that were part jellyfish. I actually first heard this in the company of Agnes on Saturday. And bless her heart, she just yelled, stop that! Stop! Make it stop! Play that again. What? Is he serious? Well, to the extent that it keeps his mouth-walking, knuckle-breathing faithful out there, mouth-walking and knuckle-breathing, he's as serious as Rachel Jackson's heart attack. How did I miss the glow-in-the-dark part jellyfish spider monkey chimeras? I mean, when I was a kid, we went through a 2 or 3 or 4 year phase, because my parents were raised in the Depression and valued money, of me begging for a package of sea monkeys. Because it was all so adorable, the way they were packaged and advertised. You know, you had the little sea monkey king with his little sea monkey king crown, and his sea monkey queen wife, who was very obviously pregnant with other little sea monkeys, and they lived in their little sea monkey kingdom, and they had a little sea monkey king or prince whose name was probably Alex Jones. And, oh, please, no, it's a waste of money. Please, no, waste of money, no. And they won the battle insofar as I finally got old enough to realize that what it was a little package of brine shrimp eggs. And, yes, they would grow, but they were not sea monkeys. They were brine shrimp. And what they would do is they would hatch. And they would do whatever it was that little brine shrimp do, which is mostly make your fishbowl kind of cloudy. But for a kid with an imagination, the graphics, the artwork, was an entree into a whole separate world. Now, 20 years ago, I would have been 34. Let's see. That means Laura would have been
Margie 3. Laura would have been 9. Margie would have been 3. Ferg and Doodle would not have been here yet.
But don't you think I had been able to get my hands on a rhesus that was part jellyfish? We would have tried to bring one in for... Because you can just buy them in the bazaar in Hong Kong. Our eldest was absolutely enwrapped by the idea of a hermit crab we brought back from the beach. Change shells and the hermit crab will crawl out of the shell and it'll go over and get in the other shell.
The world of nature.
I ripped off my kids. 20 years, there have been rhesus monkeys available that glowed in the dark and were part jelly. And I deprived my kids of that? Damn.
Colbert will probably play that, because monkeys in medical experiments is funny. It's funny that I'm upset about that.
Wait, they're doing medical experiments in the bazaars of Hong Kong? And how does Alex Jones know about the pain? I mean, is it jellyfish pain? Or is it rhesus monkey pain? Does it hurt when they glow in the dark? Now, this isn't something like the other night when I said something rather flip and perhaps callous about foie gras. That really does happen, and people make moral decisions on whether or not to eat foie gras based on the way foie gras is produced. But there aren't any rhesus monkeys that glow in the dark and are part jellyfish. And they aren't for sale and have not been for sale for 20 years in the bazaars of Hong Kong. Well, Bill, we're done with this rhesus monkey that glows in the dark and is part jellyfish. Let's take him down to our rhesus monkey that glows in the dark and is part jellyfish bazaar stall in Hong Kong. Sure thing, Fred.
Funny. It's something good to laugh at because it's fun to be ignorant and just be a trendy. It's fun to laugh at Alex Jones. It's fun. Randall, get my lawyer over here when he comes up. Hey, how's it going?
Yeah, that's when the sheriff walks up. I kid you not. It's fun to laugh at Alex Jones. It's fun. Yes, it is. Because if he really believes this stuff, he's deeply, well, but he doesn't. This is shtick. This is what you have to do if you want to be successful in the white wing. You've got to constantly one-up yourself with a little bit more madness, a little bit more madness, until finally you're barking like a rhesus monkey that glows in the dark and is part jellyfish. But yeah, that's really, really when the sheriff walked up and said, you know, you need to move away from the steps of the... Right. Uh-huh. Oh, good news. We're back on the air. Thanks for letting me know. So, note coming in from Steve in China. Bring out the zombies. This is what happens when the middle class disappears. We're reduced to hybrid monsters and rhesus jelly monkey agents for world domination. Insert last line of Eliot's The Wasteland here. Sad. Very, very sad. Yeah, it is. We could go so far as to say pathetic. So there's a question. What's the remedy? And I don't ask that rhetorically. And I don't necessarily know the answer. But if his numbers are true, and of course they aren't, there's probably somewhere around 5 million, 10 million people a week. Who hear that and are somewhere on a continuum between that Alex Jones is the only one who knows the truth and, you know, the rest of us. I can't imagine deliberately tuning into Alex Jones every day just to hear what madness is going to spew forth. And, you know, he says he's been very critical of Trump. Then why was the guy who was filling in for him, you know, Roger Stone? Who is a rat fucker who goes all the way back to the Nixon days of rat fucking.
I don't know. Maybe it's the rhesus monkeys that glow in the dark and are part jellyfish. VT Blom in the chat room says, Bob, we need education. Yeah, we need it, and we need it desperately, and we are in the clutches of people who want anything but. And just as a passing reference to sort of the fall and collapse of civilization, last Friday we talked about the Fyre Festival. And last night, well, and then Saturday night came the White House Correspondents Association dinner. But for me, the highlight of Saturday was Samantha Bee's not the White House Correspondents Association dinner. Clips are available online. I recommend it highly. Great laughs and, you know, just some brilliant concepts. The one segment, skit, tableau, whatever, that featured George Takei handing off a film a la The Man in the High Castle to Samantha Bee, in which she watches a film of an alternate universe in which Hillary Clinton becomes president.
Hillary Clinton, Jesus Christ, oh my God, Goldman Sachs speeches. She would have started World War III.
Was nothing short of brilliant. And to be fair, Samantha Bee did not. Samantha Bee had fun with the Hillary side of that too. Referencing the fact that her first 100 days had passed and she had been dealing with her impeachment for 100 days. Note coming from Steve in New York. Alex Jones is critical of Trump. Didn't he say he'd actually die for Trump? Bob, fuck, please tell me I'm dreaming and Donald Trump is just the host of a bad TV program. Sorry, brain fart. Sorry, can't do that. Reality spoken here, Steve. Oh, by the way, as we wrap up the last 9 minutes of the program, which has turned out to be a three-hour filibobster, some of which was not broadcast live, but most of which was. We still have a $25 challenge on the table, courtesy of Ralph's. And it would be nice if that challenge was met, because then we would only have a $400 fundraising goal come Thorn in the Side Thursday. So that challenge is on the table. Please, somebody, don't let it pass by. And thank you, Ralph's, for making it. So go watch the Samantha Bee, not the White House Correspondents' Dinner. It's worth your time. Asa asks, so Alex Jones being very critical of Trump was just a character he was playing? Hey, well, that's the open question for all of it now. I mean, wouldn't you like to, if that when that sheriff wandered up, wouldn't it have been nice if he would have taken away and said, no, I'm the bailiff. After that rhesus monkeys that glow in the dark and are part jellyfish comment, the judge would like to speak to you and find out if you really mean that or if that's just a character you're playing. Yeah. And then last night, Sunday night, came the Met Gala. And I don't mind. I don't want to seem like some sort of. I don't know what it is. I don't want to seem like I am. But when you watch the wealth class flaunt their wealth, like went on at the Met Gala, which I suppose is a gala that supports the Metropolitan Museum of Art in New York, and that's fine. But Jesus Christ, the dresses. I mean, a tuxedo is a tuxedo is a tuxedo for the most part. And I wouldn't know Kendall Jenner if I walked up to her on the streets of downtown Beckley. At least not if she was not unless she was wearing what she was almost not wearing last night. I don't care about nakedness. Nudity doesn't bother me in the least. But this was a gown made out of a fisherman's net that was thrown over a thong. If Kendall Jenner turns you on, that was probably awesome. And Katy Perry showed up looking like either a character from the Powerpuff Girls or Winona Ryder as the bride in Beetlejuice. It was kind of a red, burlappy sort of burka. At least as far as I could tell. Maybe it was a political statement. Thank you very kindly, Steve, in New York, for meeting part of the challenge. $15 to go on Ralph's challenge. Thank you, Steve. Thank you very much. Thanks, Lamar. Good job, Bob, with what you had to work with. I appreciate that. The server does what the server does. Sometimes the magic works, sometimes it doesn't. And we will save for Thursday the discussion of what looks like the coming candidacy of Hillary Clinton. Too early for her to declare anything, but as the Angry Architect in Australia pointed out, two articles on two successive days in the Sydney Morning Herald about Hillary Clinton and why she thinks and why other Democrats think she lost. We probably need to unpack that. Mm-hmm. So I thank you again for the night off last night. I really appreciate it. And I apologize for my absence tomorrow night. But I think it's worthwhile to help people to understand, who will then help other people to understand, what is actively being done to them here in Appalachia. You'd be surprised how many people don't know anything about the nearly 30 peer-reviewed journal articles that have been published that show what mountaintop removal is doing to the people who breathe the coal company poisons. Okay. So again, thank you very kindly, one and all, for joining in on this Titanic Tuesday. Thank you to everyone who participates in the program in whatever means you do so participate. Thank you to all of you, and there are a lot fewer of you than there are listeners, frankly. And there are people who can't support the program. And they really appreciate yours who do. Thank you to those of you who do keep the program on the air. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff, Sparky in the chat room. Midweek utility chat room moderator Steve will not have to moderate tomorrow evening because there's not going to be any prayer meeting Wednesday. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thank you to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.